Hello?
Hey, John, do you hear me? It's Elliot.
Hey, Elliot, how's it going?
Not bad, not bad. How are you doing?
I'm good, I'm good. We're just prepping for Team North America coming in.
Yeah.
It's funny, I'm going to ask you about Team North America at the end of this interview, the other Team North America. So, Elliot, we are now a couple of days removed from Ference Gate, from Andrew Ference dropping bombs here on the podcast earlier on this week. I think we both knew there was going to be some feathers that were ruffled. I think we both knew there would be some eyebrows that were raised, some people that may have been upset about it. We are surprised at how quickly a certain corner of Oilers media, Twitter, mainstream media, radio shows, TV, how quickly the Ference comments caught fire.
No, I don't know how anybody could be surprised at that. Edmonton's a really passionate market. It's a really passionate fan base. It's a fan base that hasn't been happy with a lot of things that have happened recently. I don't see how anybody could be surprised it went the way it did. The interesting thing was about it. So Mark Spector called me the other day, our great writer in Edmonton, and he was going on radio to talk about it. And one of the things he was curious about, and I thought it was a great question, was it something we planned in advance? And the answer was no. And I understood where Mark was going with his question. He was kind of saying, okay, you sit down before an interview and sometimes a guy will ask, okay, what am I going to talk about?
Yeah.
And most of the time you try to avoid it, but sometimes there's questions you'll tell them because you want them to think of a good answer. And the only question that I told Ference I was going to ask him was the one about being a staunch NHLPA member during his playing career and now working for the league. The Edmonton thing happened, you know, very organically. We weren't trying to go there or trying to make headlines. But when he said it, you knew there was a chance that it was going to happen. And the only thing that really disappoints me about it is there was a lot of good stuff in that interview. I loved the stuff about Jerome McGinley. I loved the stuff about his glove malfunction. I loved a lot of the stuff. He talked about the playoff format he'd like to see with teams picking their opponents. I know that's something you love a great deal. It got overshadowed and everything else, but I don't think any of us could be surprised. And honestly, I don't blame anybody in Edmonton for running with that.
Who do you think it casts in the most negative light? And I say that knowing that the obvious answer is the players to whom which he was referring, which, by the way, he never named.
You know, but the other thing, too, is he also never said Young.
Yeah.
I understand in Edmonton they would go to the young players or they would specifically target young players. I don't think he ever said that. Mm-hmm. I went back and listened to it, and I didn't hear it. Now, if I'm missing something, someone will tell me, but I get it. Look, I think the toughest thing is that we want people to come on our podcast, other radio shows, television, do interviews, print, broadband, whatever. We want them to come on and we want them to be honest. Tell us their truth, how they feel. And then when they say something, it becomes, there's blowback. And I get it. Like, I do get it, but we can't have it both ways. We can't sit there and say we want honesty and mm-hmm. then not like the honesty.
To some, that may seem as if it's code breaking.
I'm sure to some people it is.
That was from the room and that stays in the room. And unless you're part of that team, you should not be privy to that information.
You have to look at it from everybody's perspective. But first of all, I've heard a lot worse than that in interviews before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know. I mean, like I said, Jeff, we kind of thought after the interview was over that would get news. But sometimes you're surprised at what becomes news and what doesn't. Oftentimes I'll write my 31 thoughts and I'll say, this is going to be big and it goes nowhere. And this is going to be nothing and it becomes a mushroom cloud. You just never know what is going to inflame people. Look, we do a podcast. We're basically doing two a week now.
Yep.
We've got John Cooper on this one. We've got Luke Robitaille coming out Monday. We did a separate one with Brian Boyle. We did a separate one with Gary Bettman. You want guests to come on and feel like they're going to be comfortable coming on your show and being honest. And I just hope that what happened in this situation, and again, I don't blame anyone for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a natural situation that after he said it, there was going to be news and some people were going to react very negatively. I don't understand how anyone could suspect any different. I just hope that it doesn't prevent people from being willing to come on and be honest.
With that, we'll begin this week's podcast. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the GMC Terrain.
Along the near side and ahead now to Kuznetsov into the zone, holding right circle for Ovechkin. He scores from the left circle. Ovechkin's third of the year. It's 2-0 Washington.
All right, on cue.
Now back to right corner on a cross. Ovechkin scores. He does it again from the office. Second of the night. It's 3-2 Washington. Now to the right side, Ovechkin. Right circle, a shot, he scores! Ovechkin does it again! Overtime winner from the right circle! Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Carolina! Coming in front, loose in front of Hellebuck, who lost his goal stick. Wilson with a chance, rebound, they score! And there it is! On the rebound, Alex Ovechkin, the 20th player in National Hockey League history to score 600 goals in his soon-to-be Hall of Fame career!
That was a great John Walton and his call of various goals on WFED. Elliot Friedman, as you write about on 31 Thoughts, the blog this week. David Amber's been banging this one for a while.
Oh, my goodness.
Ovechkin's catching Gretz. 8 is catching 99 for career goals. You buy it?
I've moved slightly in that direction. Look, we all know that David Amber is one of the most annoying human beings on the planet, okay? And now what's going to make him even more annoying is that Ovechkin is making this a conversation.
Okay.
So Amber's been on this for a couple years, and I want to go back on this. So 2016 World Cup of Hockey, we had a sit-down scheduled with Ovechkin after one of Team Russia's practices. And Amber was like, you have to ask him if he thinks he can catch Gretzky. It's his big thing. So I said, you know what? Okay. And to be honest, it was a rushed interview that day, and it just wasn't a great situation. It wasn't a great interview. And then I asked him about that, and it made him come to life. He looked at me like, you're an idiot. There is no way that is happening. In today's NHL, there's no chance that I'm catching him. And as a postscript to all of that, Ovechkin has a lot of time for Gretzky. Sergei Kucherov, the PR guy for the Capitals, does a tremendous job. He used to work in Arizona when Gretzky was there. And so there was one time when Washington was out west a few years ago where Kucherov set it up where he met Gretzky. I can't remember if he went to Gretzky's place or they went to a restaurant,
yeah,
but they met for dinner. And I heard that Gretzky was fantastic to Ovechkin, and Ovechkin really lapped it up. He asked a whole bunch of questions, and Gretzky was great. So part of this, I think, is because Ovechkin has a lot of respect for Gretzky. But he just said it's not happening in this NHL. Well, now, you know, all of a sudden we wake up on Wednesday morning. He's got a hat trick the night before, his 12th of his career. Yeah. He's got 25 goals as we tape this podcast, which is 4 more ahead of Skinner, Laine, Braden Point, and someone else who
Pavelski, or maybe he has
no
20.
Pavelski at 20.
Okay.
I'm sure people will tweet at us who are missing.
Hi, the guys.
But you're looking at him and you're going, all right, what's going on here? Because it was funny. I was having a text conversation with someone on Tuesday night, and we were saying, this guy's not slowing down. You know, he's not satisfied. You think he'd be fat and happy after they finally won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
But no, he's not. And part of it, I think, is because he's got a new lease on life. Part of it is because the Capitals could repeat. He's really going. And I started to crunch the numbers. And I still don't think it's going to happen. But all of a sudden, I'm beginning to wonder, when is Father Time going to step into the ring against Alexander Ovechkin?
The game continues to open up. The game gets
much
easier
to score.
And the equipment continues to shrink.
Yeah.
And the only mitigating factor in all of it may be this, because I'm with you. Like, I think that Ovechkin is Russian Pac-Man. He's just going to keep on gobbling. He's just going to keep on doing it. Like, he is not going to get full. This guy just wants to score goals until the game is over.
What's the difference between Russian Pac-Man and North American?
I don't know. I was going to say Pac-Man and just throwing Russian for a little bit of spice. So he's Russian Pac-Man to me. He's just going to keep going until the game's over. Right? He doesn't care. He's just going to keep, you know, filling himself with pucks. That's it. Goals, 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 goals. The only thing that gives me pause is the way he scores the lion's share of his goals is he blows pucks past goalies.
Yeah.
That's how he scores the majority of his goals. Don't your shoulders have to get tired after a while? Doesn't your body have to say,
well, can you still get
I'm
there?
Not blowing pucks past goalies anymore? Like, there's so many different ways to score goals. So many different ways that players have figured out to change how they score goals. Austin Matthews is probably the best, and you've talked about this before on the blog and on the pod, about changing up, you know, how he shoots, how he releases the puck. Great goal scorers. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but think of Wayne Gretzky since he holds the record. He scored goals so many different ways, right? Found different ways to score goals. Ovechkin just doesn't always score his goals on that one-timer from the OV office, but the lion's share of them do come from there. The only reason why I would cool up on what Amber thinks is when you make it your business to blow pucks past goaltenders and you continually challenge anyone to stop you. And so far they haven't. My question is, won't they one day? And then what? Can he score significantly? Because I know he can, but can he score in bunches significantly without that shot from that spot?
Why do you assume they're going to stop him? They haven't yet.
I know. I keep saying that. Oh, he's going to slow down. He's going to slow down. But he keeps firing pucks past goalies. And
the other thing, too, is you wondered if what would stop him would be Backstrom maybe hitting a wall. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look like he's hitting a wall either. And they've also got Kuznetsov. So you think even if Backstrom does slow down, he can play with the other guy who is, sources say, not bad. I think this is all fascinating. I agree with you. I think the biggest change is the game has changed. It gives him more of a chance. But here's the thing. He's 33 years old. He'll be 34 next September. The most goals scored by anyone that age or older is Jágr, 54. Okay? When you take a look at ages 33 to 40, which is what he'd basically need to get to, he started this season 287 goals behind Gretzky. He's now 262. The most goals scored from anyone by anyone from ages 33 to 40 is 274. That's Johnny Busick, 1968 to 76. Very different era. I still don't think he's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm starting to have some doubts in my belief he's not going to do it.
You're not writing it in pen. You're writing it in pencil.
Yeah. I'm giving Amber props. I'm saying that, you know, it's not so ridiculous anymore. But, I mean, to me, the biggest question is how long does he want to play? He's got two more years under contract. Does he want to go past that? And one of the interesting things about it is, somebody pointed out to me that Roger Federer sort of rededicated himself after he had kids. He wanted to play well enough, long enough that his kids would kind of understand what their father does. I get that. I always forget who the player was, but there was a player once who told me he asked his team to wait for his number to be retired because he wanted his kids to be old enough to see it.
Hmm.
And I asked Ovechkin that in September when we were there, do you want your kids to sort of, your son to understand who his daddy is? And he kind of sloughed it off, but I've heard it might actually be something for him. That might turn out to be the biggest determining factor.
You know, I was always of the belief, although it has changed now, that he would end up finishing his career in the KHL. That at the end of it, not unlike Pavel Datsyuk right now, that he would finish in the KHL, not the NHL. Do you believe that?
I'm not so sure I believe it anymore.
But did you? Because
I think there was a time we all thought that. I mean, the one thing that you have to remember about Ovechkin is he has a lot of pride in his country. So I could see it. I could see him doing the Pavel Datsyuk where he goes back overseas for a couple of years. So it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's very proud of where he comes from. But the thing is, we used to talk about that like it was a negative. Like, how dare he leave the NHL and go back and play in the KHL?
Yeah.
But now that he's won, everybody looks at him differently. I think as I get older and I understand people more, I look at Ovechkin and say, well, this is a guy who's clearly proud to be Russian. If he went back there, I think we'd all have to understand that. But I don't know. If you told me, okay, his contract's up, he'll be approaching 36, 37, maybe he wants to go back.
It's interesting, too, if you weigh the pucks generationally.
But he's always said he wanted to be here.
Yes, unwaveringly.
Unwaveringly.
If you, you know, weigh the pucks generationally, like this is how much an elite goal scorer scores in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. This is all based on quality of competition, the technology, how the game is played, etc. You know, you'll be able to make a pretty strong case that he's the greatest goal scorer of all time. Period. That's, you know, Rocket Richard, Mike Bossy, Wayne Gretzky, like all of them. He just might be at the top. And this is for, you know, foreheads taller than mine and brains bigger than mine who cross-generationally are able to, you know, suss out, this is 1.5 pucks in this year, this is 3/4 of a puck this year. But you can probably make the case that he's the greatest of all time.
Goal scorer?
Goal scorer.
No question. By era, he is.
When you adjust for era, absolutely. You know who else is chasing Wayne Gretzky now?
Who?
Tim Peel.
Oh, no! Deflection of the net!
And that's going to count.
Seen this. I saw it in a video I wanted to see if a goal like that would count. The referee is very much part of the game, and that goal would count. I've never seen this.
And Tim Peel is hurt. Look at that. It hits Peel and bounces in. And Peel is down, still on one knee. This one caught him right in the midsection. Look at that. I mean, you can't get a worse break than that. Impossible to.
Thankfully, Tim Peel is okay. I know he hit his head on the boards, and that looked pretty scary. A number of things from that moment. This is the Robert Bertuzzo dump in, hits Tim Peel, goes into the Florida net. It's not a goal because it's not counted because you can't score off a referee. So many things on that. One, if I told you that a referee was going to score a goal in the NHL, who would be the perfect netminder in the league to surrender it? Who would greet it with the best sense of humor?
Well, I was going to pick Curtis Joseph because he once accidentally knocked over a referee.
I know, so it'd be some sort
of, it might be some sort of justice.
No, in the NHL right now, who would which goaltender has the best sense
Luongo.
Of...
Oh, Luongo.
And it was.
Yeah.
And it was. It was Roberto Luongo.
The only problem with it being Luongo was it was a game they needed to have, right? So they lost, so he's probably in a really foul mood. But I would generally agree with you, the overall sense of the moment, he would be that guy.
Yeah.
But I'm sure last night he's sitting there saying, I really don't want to talk about this right now as we lose a game we have to have.
Two other things on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Peel lives in St. Louis.
Right.
Tim Peel scored a goal for the St. Louis Blues in St. Louis against the goaltender with the best sense of humor this side of Gump Worsley in the NHL.
I really hope that the NHL and the Officials Association has the right approach to this, that they take the puck from the game and they wrap it in tape, first NHL goal, and they do one of the plaques for him that all players get with their first goal puck.
One would hope so. One would hope so. Speaking of St. Louis Blues, Alex Pietrangelo, you write about the defenseman. What's happening there?
So Nick had the big scoop on the weekend. Just a great piece of reporting by Nick that there might be some interest from Toronto on Alex Pietrangelo. And I think Nick is all around it. I think he's 100%. Doesn't he needs my backing, but he's 100% correct. I think there was something going on there. And with a few more days to work on it, what I believe happened is that St. Louis was talking to Toronto about Nylander, and they brought Pietrangelo's name up. And they said, would you be interested? And I think Toronto would be interested in Pietrangelo as a player. Who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. But I don't think they were interested. Well, obviously they didn't make the deal, but I don't think they would be interested. From what I understand about the Maple Leafs, they would be interested in him in that particular trade. And the reason is Nylander's 6 years younger.
Yeah.
And secondly, Pietrangelo's 1 year away from an extension. He's due. He's eligible on July 1st. And I think they'd be worried that they could sign him under their cap situation. So if you were going to tell me that Toronto wasn't going to do Pietrangelo from Nylander in that deal, I totally believe it. But that doesn't mean, as Nick says, that they wouldn't be willing to do Pietrangelo in another deal. I think they're looking at every defenseman out there. I think they're not looking for guys with a lot of term, or if they have some term, they're not making big money. I could see them saying, okay, we'll take Pietrangelo for two playoff runs, and if we can't sign him, we'll move on. But we'll see if they revisit them.
Do you think that listen, St. Louis is having a real tough season.
They're That's in total WTF mode.
Yeah, understood. And so because of that, do you think that it's almost a given that Alex Pietrangelo will soon, maybe not soon, will one day be ex of the St. Louis Blues?
I think you have to prepare in St. Louis for anything can happen. The organization's in shock right now. There's some years you go into a season, Jeff, and you know you're not going to be very good. And there's other years you go into a season and you say, we're going to be really good. And St. Louis thought they were going to be really good, and the reverse has happened. And it takes you a while to come to grips and understand that. That's where the Blues are now. So I think, and I do agree with this, from what I understand, their approach is, let's start seeing what's available on our guys, and then we'll make our decisions. You have to be prepared, if you're a St. Louis Blues fan, that major surgery is coming. And they'll listen on Tarasenko. They'll listen on Pietrangelo. They will listen on just about anyone.
Parayko?
Yes, they would listen on Parayko. That doesn't mean all these guys are getting traded, but I think you have to believe it means that some of those guys are getting traded. And Tarasenko is in the dreaded situation, which is his no trade kicks in July 1st. So St. Louis knows if they want to deal him, they have to do it now, some point before then.
And listen, this is a team that got whipped on the weekend, and you saw Alex Steen talk about where they're at.
Right now, we're not committed enough to what we want to accomplish, and every day is a new opportunity, and we're not taking those opportunities right now.
Saw Vlad Tarasenko apologize to St. Louis Blues fans.
I apologize to all our fans. Like, we can't play at home like this, and it's like I said, it's unacceptable, and I don't know how to fix it. We work on it, but it doesn't work for now. And we have a really hard game, and next day we just blow up like this. I don't know.
You have Braden Schenn talking about how the team is fragile.
Our players have used the word fragile. I think you've used the word fragile as well.
And in a delicate spot, you have a practice fight between Robert Bertuzzo and Zach Sanford, and the losing continues.
Kind of par for the course for the Blues. They've lost 10 of the last 14 games. They fired Mike Yeo. They've gone 3-5-1 under Craig Berube. So this happens at practice on Monday. Robert Bertuzzo, Zach Sanford fighting during practice. And now people wondering where St. Louis goes from here. That's a pretty good one.
I think you're right about major surgery, but correct me if I'm wrong, true or false, when GMs call, they call for Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou.
They do, but I think they understand that that's not where St. Louis necessarily wants to go. If they're trading those guys, they're getting a young piece with term in return. Mm-hmm. St. Louis is not doing rentals. St. Louis is not necessarily doing older guys. I would guess, and I don't know this. This is just me speculating, by the way. I understand that most people in the NHL think if you're trading a guy like that, you're getting a young player with team control who's very good. I'll tell you, 2 years ago, too, on Pietrangelo, I don't think there's any way he's going to Toronto. Mm-hmm. Don't know if he wants that aggravation or that hassle. But right now, John Tavares is there. They've got a long history back to novice hockey. If it's even possible, there's no doubt he's picking up the phone. He's calling John Tavares, and John Tavares is telling him, I'm here. I love it. It's not that bad. And he's going.
It's great when you win in Toronto.
It's great. This is the thing, and I really believe that this was the mistake Montreal forgot at the end with P.K. Subban, and this is what Vancouver had such a gift in the Twins. You have to, if you're going to play in that market, you have to be one of two people. The person who can embrace the stage or the person who can ignore the stage. You've got to be one or the other. Tavares can do both. He can both embrace and ignore. PK embraced it. He didn't ignore it because he loved it. So the Sedins embraced and ignored. You have to be willing to do one or both of those things, and you need guys like that.
I want to bounce around a bunch of topics here on this week's edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Philadelphia, as we record this tonight, we'll be doing the Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey game, 9 o'clock Eastern. Calgary Flames facing off against the Philadelphia Flyers. Chuck Fletcher, GM, is on this 5-game road trip that the Flyers are on. Tonight is game 3. What's happening with Wayne Simmonds? What's happening with the goalie situation? What's happening with the Flyers, period?
Wayne Simmonds... We talked about this on the podcast last week. Ron Hextall didn't want to give him the term.
Yeah.
And whether or not he was being shopped depended on who you talked to. So I think to some teams they were talking, to other teams they weren't. Chuck Fletcher's on this West Coast trip. He's going to say he's going to sit down with Simmonds, just get a chance to know him, talk to him. I think what that's going to mean is a follow-up conversation. His agent's Eustace King. I don't have any doubt in the next week or two he'll be calling just to see where are we and what can we do. So I think, no guarantees, but I think there'll be a restart. The goalie question to me is interesting. I've had a lot of teams tell me they don't like the market. Cam Talbot, starting to play better, but you know hasn't been great.
Jimmy Howard.
Jake Allen, started to play a bit better, but generally hasn't been great. Jimmy Howard, big price. Detroit's telling people they're talking a first rounder. Craig Anderson, I had one team tell me they really like him, but they're worried he's burned out from all the rubber he's seen and all the action he's played. Charlie Lindgren, I think there's a lot of teams that like him, but Montreal's not trading that guy unless it's for a haul. So you're sitting there and you're going, okay, for the price we have to pay, who do we really like? Now, Philadelphia, their whole thing is it's the bridge, right? The bridge from here to Carter Hart.
Yeah.
So how do you get there? Well, there's two guys that could make some sense. Corey Crawford's one. He's got one more year under contract. Jonathan Quick is another. He's got 4 more years under contract, but he makes $7 million this year and next, and then it really starts to drop.
I'd be concerned about the term, though.
I understand that and the injuries. I get that. You know, Quick has been healthy a lot, except 2 years ago and this year, and you know, when you're older, you're always worried about when does a guy fall off the cliff.
Especially when you play that style
that he does. I love Jonathan Quick as a person, though. I think he's fantastic. I'm a big Jonathan Quick fan, but I get it. You know, Chicago, you're sitting there, you've got 9 wins, and I know they don't want to pull the plug. They really believe in trying to compete as long as they can. I understand Corey Crawford also has had injury problems. He missed a good chunk of last year with a concussion. He's got a partial no-trade. Quick has no protection. I would bet that both of those teams would say, these are guys who've been a huge part of what we've done. We're not putting them anywhere they don't want to go.
Speaking of Chicago, what's going to happen there? This is very unfamiliar territory for this team, although no one's going to feel sorry for them.
No.
With 3 Stanley Cups in their hip pocket. I do feel bad for Jeremy Culleton, and I do think they should stop doing one thing specifically in Chicago. And that's announcing the coach before games. Because the reception isn't good and it's not fair to Culleton. And he can't help the fact that he's not Joel Quenneville.
I agree. You know, I never like getting mad at fans because they pay our salaries.
I get it.
Hey, look, you and I don't have this podcast if it isn't for all these fans.
True.
So I don't like getting mad at them. But I'll tell you this. If I was in Jeremy Culleton's shoes, I would never let them stop announcing me. Never. I don't care if you boo me. I'm not taking my name down. Because the moment you take your name down, somebody is going to write about it or say it. Hey, did you see Jeremy Culleton took his name off, or the Blackhawks took the name off so they couldn't boo him? To me, that's worse. To me, that's running away. If I was behind the bench, I would be like, I don't care if 25,000 people boo me, including the media and the press box. You are not taking my name off that announcement because that's showing that it gets to me or you win. People will notice that thing. I would be like, I don't care. Keep announcing me. And eventually, if I do the job right and we do the job right, they'll cheer us.
You have a sense of what's happening there? What Stan Bowman wants to do? What he's trying to do?
They put out a note last week. Scott Powers of The Athletic had it, I think, that they sent out an offers on Ruda and Manning or just made it and be known.
Yeah.
I have to think they are clearing the decks to take a big run at Panarin.
Get him back in the
mix. Get him back.
Would he go? He'll be UFA July 1.
Until I'm told differently, if I'm putting money on it, I'm betting on the Rangers.
It's a big ticket.
Yeah, but the Rangers have the room, and he's
oh, no,
a hell
no,
of
I'm
a
not
player.
Saying. I'm saying for Chicago, that's a big ticket.
You know,
what is Chicago then?
Chicago's not interested.
Taking a couple steps back?
They're not interested. If you get a high pick this year and you get Panarin, what they have to do is they have to find defense.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing. Can they find defensemen?
Think they would move Keith? You've talked about it before.
I would have the conversation with them. First of all, you got to find out what your offers are.
Yep.
And then I would have the conversation with them. But that's Duncan Keith's choice, and he's earned that right.
Another team, I'm focusing a lot on the negative in the NHL, but here we are. Los Angeles Kings. Watching that game last night against the Buffalo Sabres. Big comeback by the Sabres. They win in overtime. Jeff Skinner, 21st goal of the season. It's wonderful for the Swords. Tough game getting there. Doughty out in the first. Phaneuf out in the first. Fantenberg with what I think is a pretty weak call, which leads to the 4-on-3 in overtime. And they end up losing to the Buffalo Sabres. Sabres' five-game losing streak is over. What happens in L.A. now?
I think that's another situation where they're going to look to make moves. I'd heard Muzzin in Tampa Bay, but somebody told me I was off on that one. Martinez, definitely. I think Pittsburgh has been looking at their D.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh's looking for a D. The one that's interesting to me is Jeff Carter. He's got five more years. Not huge money, but he's got five more years. Someone suggested that, you know, maybe Boston. Boston's been looking for a third-line center all season.
And let's not forget, too, Boston was in the Kovalchuk Derby.
Yes, they were.
Can you see that get revisited when he's healthy
no,
again?
No.
I think that ship has sailed?
I would go for Carter. If I had a choice, I would go for Carter.
Hey, speaking of Boston, just freestyling this off the top here, do we have any indication of what's happening with Rick Nash?
His agent is Joe Resnick. I've texted him a bit. He says no change. I wrote to Rick once last year. I think it was Fluto Shinzawa of The Athletic, it was either him or Kevin Paul Dupont. I don't want to
attribute incorrectly.
I don't want to attribute. It was a Boston-based guy, and they can tell me which guy it was, but I want to mention both of them. They had the story first last year that he was thinking of retiring due to the concussion issues.
Right.
And I sent a text to Rick Nash, and I said, hey, I just wanted to see if you wanted to talk about it. And he wrote back that he was interested in playing. And then someone else reported that he wasn't, and he didn't sign anywhere. And I don't have any problem with the fact that Nash was kind of confused at the time because I think he was going through a lot of different emotions. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very emotional decision. He turned down $16 million from someone. He had a three-year $16 million offer out there, and he said no to it. But there was one time earlier this year it was reported he was going to retire, and Joe Resnick really fought against that. He said, that's not true, but it's kind of a funny week. So the short answer is no, I haven't heard anything,
yeah.
But it's a kind of a funny week because Kevin Bieksa, who was on this podcast and said he was thinking about maybe coming back next year, he's going to represent Canada at the Spengler Cup. And someone after I wrote that today, somebody told me, said that he might actually be the captain of the team.
Would make some sense.
Yeah.
Would make sense. This is an audition for the NHL now. For Bieksa, like, I can understand why, and maybe I'm surprised that more players don't. This is a long season.
Yeah.
Like, this is tough. 82 games on your body is hard for these guys. Doesn't surprise me that Bieksa would want to just dip his toe back in the pool.
Why not?
And play Spengler.
Why wouldn't you want to play as long as you possibly could? What a great experience.
Oh, I would do it in a flash. I wouldn't care about what my hockey DB said. I would want, at the end of the career, go string it out in Europe for a couple of years. Take the family. You know, you're established with a family usually by then. Go take them out. I'm going to play in Germany. I'm going to play in Italy. I'm going to play in, you know, Sweden. I would do that in Switzerland. Oh, so imagine.
Well, Joe
finishing
Thornton
up
has
in
said
Switzerland?
He's going to do that.
Yeah, I know.
Joe Thornton has said that. We talked about Ovechkin, Datsyuk. Why not?
What's
Why not
the,
play what, as long as you could?
There's a great saying out there. Use hockey. Don't let hockey use you. Do it. Use it as a vehicle. Go have experience.
Bob Knight, who I know is not the great guy to quote anymore, he said that Isaiah Thomas, when he was have you guys heard? I used to cover the NBA.
Here we go.
Isaiah Thomas, when he was GM of the Raptors, one of the first interviews I did with him, He told me that that's what Bob Knight said to him. Is Indiana going to use you, or are you going to use Indiana?
It's a great line.
Because he played, I think, 2 years of college basketball, and he won the national championship his second year and went pro with the Pistons. But I always remembered that. Are you going to use Indiana, or is Indiana going to use you?
Quick thought and a couple of last things before we get to John Cooper, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Bob Murray, contract extension, Anaheim, GM.
I love Bob Murray.
You've said that before, I know.
You know, he doesn't give you anything, and he barks at you when he talks at you. But I just find him really funny. Last year, before the draft, I reported that Kessler might not play this year. You know, it was true at the time. They were really concerned about it, and so was Kessler about playing. And I think that guy has done a lot this year to get back. I'm really impressed. So Eric Stevens, one of the reporters out there, asked Murray about what I reported, and Murray says at the draft, that's just Elliot throwing bleep at the wall. And then Eric ran it. He put it in his column. And so the next day,
awesome.
At the draft, Murray comes up to me and goes, you know, do you have a problem with that? And, you know, I didn't think that was going to end up in print. I just laughed. I said, no, I thought it was a great line. But, yeah. You know, I just have a lot of respect for the way he runs his team. I know people look at it and say, oh, there's bad contracts, or they don't like his coaching choices, whatever. Every GM has issues. But I see a team in Anaheim has a lot of challenges. They have the smallest lower bowl in the NHL, and they run a tight budget. But he's missed the playoffs twice in 8 years, I think it is. Maybe eight and I think twice in 10 years. They won their division five times in a row before Vegas got them last year. They've been to the Western Conference Final twice in the last 4 years. I know you want more, and I know you sit there and you want to see them win. But I think when you run an organization like that, which is tight and has some financial challenges, if you consistently bring the results that Bob Murray has, I mean, forget that I like the guy. Even if I didn't like the guy, I would look at that situation and say,
gotta respect it.
Gotta respect it.
Gotta respect the results.
Like, it's very easy to go south from there. And they find players.
You know, I was going to say, you know what Anaheim does?
Mm-hmm.
They find guys. Go look at their draft record. Go look at their draft history. Look at when they trade, and look at when they pick up picks, and look who they take when they get there. Mm-hmm. It's a masterclass.
It really
is.
And maybe it is Martin Madden, no question, who's their charge of amateur scouting. But you know what? If Martin – and please understand this in the spirit of it's a dead. If Martin Madden was to blow all the picks, who would get ripped? Bob Murray. So when you're the guy at the top, you get the credit and you take the blame. So good for Anaheim for putting a guy in place like Madden who knows what he's doing and letting him do the job. I don't understand people who complain about that extension. I don't get it.
Okay, before we get to the John Cooper interview, I want to let you know something special coming up after hours on Saturday night, December the 15th, a special focusing on Brock Besser of the Vancouver Canucks, a feature called Building Brock. Here's a little clip from it. This is Jim Benning talking about the decision to draft Besser.
I remember coming back from the GM meeting in Florida, and on the way back I stopped in and watched him play Friday and Saturday night. The first game he scored two goals, and it was that, you know, right off the circle, the big shot, and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy can shoot the puck.
Now into the slot, Besser shoots, he scores! Here come the Hawks, Millback sets up Besser.
What happened is stayed the next night. Wyatt Smith was with me. We watched him both nights. And so after seeing him play those two games, I didn't know where we were going to end up picking that year. But like if he was there when we picked, I knew we were going to be pretty excited about him.
No way the best was getting to us. We're still like 13 more picks. That's what we're taking from Besser.
You're good to go, gentlemen.
Get. Hi, Gary.
See you.
Vancouver select from Waterloo of the USHL, Brock Besser.
There you go. There's a clip from Building Brock. Producer Alex Blair on that one. It'll air Saturday, December 15th, right after Scott Oak takes After Hours off the air. 31 Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the GMC Terrain. With cargo space that fits the entire family's hockey bags and available all-wheel drive to keep them safe on icy roads, the GMC Terrain is a compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. GMC Terrain, we are professional grade. Welcome back to 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Jeff Merrick alongside Elliot Friedman, and pleased to be joined by someone I'm guessing who's smiling plenty these days. John Cooper is the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. John, we'll start off with asking you to finish this sentence. The best thing about being John Cooper these days is blank.
Working for Jeff Vinnick.
Smart answer.
I've been pretty blessed being down here in Tampa and the way that the team was set up and the timing of me coming in. And the biggest thing for me, I guess, is just trying to keep it all together. But it's been a great experience working with a great owner and the general manager and everybody through and the transitions we've been through. It's been a phenomenal experience.
I thought the answer might be the best thing about being John Cooper right now is we just lost our goalie and we didn't lose anything. Our team was the Domingue held, and the team was very good in front of him. That would make me pretty happy if I was a coach.
So how about this? In the media scrum this morning,
yeah,
I got asked post-practice. Basically, the question was, can you believe you guys are where you are in the standings? Did you think you'd even be close to here when Vasilevsky went down? You know, I looked at the person, you know, because then obviously you're sitting here saying our backup goalie wasn't capable, which he was, but it was a little startling. And I think that's probably a difference between the John Cooper of today and the John Cooper of yesteryear. Is when Steven Stamkos went down 17 games in the National Hockey League career, I thought the world was ending. And now you have to roll with the punches when situations like this go through. And the biggest thing you can do is make sure if you're not sweating it, your team won't sweat it. That's probably one of the things that I've probably learned over the years.
I'm a big believer in that. I'm a big believer that no matter how veteran your team is, the coach sets the tone. And if your coach doesn't set the proper tone, you better have a tough team mentally.
There's no question. I think one of the things that I know I get mocked a lot for the way I chew gum, I guess, on the bench. And I don't get to watch myself, but I do sometimes see it. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing? But it's just part of my routine. It's what I've done my coaching career. But the one thing is, another thing I get would be, wow, you're really calm behind the bench. Like, as compared to other coaches, you're like, I don't know how you stay so calm. But part of that is training yourself. Because to your point, Elliot, is if you're getting all riled up, the players are going to get riled up. If you're yelling at the refs, the players will yell at the refs. And so you have to save that emotion, in my opinion, for specific instances. And there's going to be times when you're firing up your team and you're animated on the bench and you're on guys, and then they kind of follow suit into that. And so you have to pick and choose, especially over 82 games, of when you're going to do certain things like that, because your team will follow suit. And that just continues right in the locker room too. So if after games and stuff like that, and you want a specific message to be delivered but without telling them that, have some post-game remarks for the guys, and 9 times out of 10, you can curtail a lot of things that you want your players to say in a post-game.
You know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago, John, here on the podcast, about coaches who, you know, when the play is on, you know, that's when they have their shouting, that's when they do their screaming, that's when, you know, they bark at guys on the bench. But then when the whistle hits and they know the camera's on them, that's when they become, you know, the Zen masters and are very calm and very composed behind the bench. Are you aware when the cameras are on you, John? Like, do you know, like, oh, hang on a second here, camera's got to be on right now?
I would say subconsciously, yes. And there was one piece of advice that Todd McClellan gave me well before I came to the NHL. I was in the American League, and I was talking with him, and he said, one thing you should do, you ever get the chance, is have somebody film you behind the bench.
Hmm.
Because, like, in the American League and all those other things, you're never on camera. And then your first stint in, and especially in the days of HD now, and it's remarkable. I don't know who talks to the camera people, but, like, why is it that when a team scores, they always go to the opposing coach. Like, why don't they put the guys, the coach on that scored? So maybe he's a little excited, or there's, but it always goes to the opposing coach. I don't know if they're looking for the scowl or the look or whatever, but you are subconsciously, you definitely know. So when you get a look at yourself of how you are, body language, as I think back to my junior days and stuff, and I'm sure my body language when something bad happened was probably pretty pathetic, but you do have to control, I feel, what you do, some of the things on the bench. Now, do I sit here and think, know exactly when I'm going to be on camera? No. But do I know, like, any time there's a whistle stoppage or a TV timeout, is there a chance you're going to be on? Yes, but I know I don't sit there and go, okay, there's a camera on me. I definitely don't do that. I just, you know, when you're coaching the game, you're coaching it while it's going on much of the time. And then when there's stoppages in play, I always feel like that's the time that players take a breath. They sit back. You can have little conversations with them. But I guess the long answer was, I don't sit there and say, like, oh, my God, I'm camera. Like, chill out. I don't feel that way.
Okay, but you do sound like you're a very media-savvy guy. Like, you're aware, you know, listen, some coaches, you know, oblivious to the fact that there are cameras in the rink sometimes. You're very aware of that. Are you aware, and do you think your netminders are aware, when your starter's getting lit up, and after four, five, six goals, whatever it is, us people in TV, as soon as another goal goes in, our shot is right to the backup goaltender?
Yeah, that actually seems to happen a lot. A lot of times, though, to be honest, like, I'm in communication with the goaltending coach during these situations. So probably a goal or two before things happen, I will throw a scenario upstairs to him and say, hey, listen, if another one goes in here, are we thinking about this or do we care? Or if this happens or this happens, just so we're not taken aback in case, God forbid, a couple more goals go in or something like this. But again, it's the nature of the beast, and you know, you want, these games are made for TV. They're not made for TV, but you want it to be good TV, and if something's going on, I think it's always fun for the announcers or whoever to put themselves kind of in the coaching and see, what are they going to do? As long as they're not, you know, directing, like, oh, they should do this or whatever, because there's so many different instances that go into goalie pulls, especially for the backup goaltender who maybe given the starter a day off, his leeway is way, like, it sucks for him in a sense because, you know, maybe your starter, you give up four or five and you're like, okay, let's just get him out, where the backup has to eat it and say, hey, the reason I'm in here is to give the starter a break. I can't get pulled and have the starter now come in a game he was supposed to take off. So that's always a tough mindset thing for the goaltender, knowing that, hey, man, you're going to have to, we'll try and grind this out for you. But it was like, perfect example was when we lost 7-1 to Arizona. And it was tough to keep Louis in there the whole time, but he knew it. And it was just, it was an off night for our team, end of a road trip, but couldn't pull him out because we wanted to give our starters some rest.
Sometimes I wonder with teams like yours, John, how do you motivate them during a regular season? Because you know you're going to be judged by the playoffs, and it's an 82-game grind to get there. But watching you in the past couple of weeks as Vasilevsky was out, I looked at a team that said, you know, we kind of like this challenge. People are going to think it's okay for us to step back. I thought you guys really stepped up. What did you learn about your group?
I thought we did too, to be honest. I think during the early part of the stretch, and Louis will be the first one to admit, he did not play his best hockey. And we were needing to score five to win. There was probably one, at least one in the games he was wishing he could have back. And I think, to be honest, that's where the mental part of it comes in. It's all of a sudden the starter's role thrust upon you, you know, because your goaltender gets hurt and you're looking at the schedule going, holy cow, I'm probably playing the next 10 in a row. And as he started to go through and just talking with him, it was his focus changed to, don't look at the big picture, just look at the next night. And he started to play just phenomenal for us. And I mean, I know that Ranger game looked 5-3 in the paper the next day. He made some brilliant saves to keep the score 3-1 before we made our comeback. And it was just kind of that mental makeup. But kind of to carry on to your question was, every coach, you don't want to sit in and say, hey, you wish there was adversity. You really don't. You want it to be smooth. You want to win. You want to play great the whole time. But in the end, a little bit of adversity does not hurt. Mm-hmm. It's actually welcome. And you do have to fight through it, and it can be nerve-wracking, and there could be a lot of uneasier, like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? But you learn a lot about your team, and it puts your teams in situations that makes them uncomfortable that prepares them for the postseason. So you don't want to see this stuff go down, but you do like to see how your team reacts to it, and fortunately for us, they did a good job.
Have to ask you about Braden Point. It seems as if the past couple of seasons he's been, you know, tapping the hockey world on its shoulder, saying, hey, pay attention to me. Hey, look at me. Do you find now, John, that people have finally turned around and now have a sense of how good this guy is?
Wait, wait, wait. I am not letting Jeff get to you with such an easy question.
Okay.
Is Braden Point your best player?
Oh, it depends how you define best. So there were people sitting here and say, is he the most talented player? I don't know if I could say that. Is he the most defensive awareness player? I don't know if I could say that. Is he got the hardest shot on the team? I don't know if I could say that. So there's a whole bunch of things in these categories you could put together. If you threw them all in a blender and then you kept going and you kept giving a rating for all these, when you pulled it all out, you might very well be at the top. And he's one of those guys. He stirs the drink. He is that type of player. You can put him in every situation, and he will find a way to excel. He's very, I call it, challengeable, mm-hmm. in the sense you can challenge him in any situation, and he is going to respond. He has found a way to, like, he's made himself a better hockey player. He wasn't this, he's always, obviously, he's always had it in him, but he made himself a faster skater, working with our skating coach and Barb. He's got given himself a better shot. He works on his, like, where he sits in the power play now, he works on that after practice. And that's what you have to really cherish about these players. It's like, geez, he really wants it. And the one thing is, though, he is not the guy. Like, he is the most unassuming, quiet. He doesn't migrate to limelight. He doesn't migrate to the camera. He is just, tell me what to do, and I will go do it for you. And he's proud. The one thing is, proud, proud hockey player. And I don't know if I've told you the story about what happened after game one against Boston last year. And he's a glaring minus four going against Bergeron. I get asked in the post scrum, like, are you going to take points off him? And I was actually a little irritated at the question, and it was no, like a vehement no. So the next game, game two, Boston scores and Pointer eats a minus. It's a bad change. So he's not even barely off the bench and they scored. So now it's minus five, and we had a little discussion after that period. You know, he's looking at me, what are we going to do here? And I'm looking at him saying, I know what we're going to do. You're going to go be better than them. And we talked about it, and he went out and had a phenomenal series. I thought he was a big reason why we got through them.
He's been outstanding.
Yeah, and you know why he's getting a lot of this? Because when people flash up the top scorers in the league, his name is starting to show up. So now people are – I always think that, you know, I hate this about, I guess, the way it's looked at sometimes, but you're always looked at as a good player if you have lots of points. But that's not necessarily the case. You could be a one-dimensional player and have lots of points. But what else do you do for your team? And that's why I think he gets a little bit more notoriety now because he is getting the points. But, you know, I've said this before, like when the Jonathan Tazes and the Anze Kopitars and the Patrice Bergerons, when they've moved on in a few more years or they're getting, you know, a little bit older, because I still think all those players are in their primes, you know, I think Pointer will be in that discussion of, like, the guys taking over for those guys in a couple more years of two-way forwards that potentially could win the Selke.
See, one of my – a little preview into, or a peek, rather, John, into how boring my life is. I love going back and redoing drafts. And I go to 2014, and I look at, and this is no slight to Aaron Ekblad and Reinhardt and Dreisaitl, you know, who go top three. But if I'm redoing that draft, it's a guy in the third round who's first overall, and that's Braden Point. I think David Pastrnak, who was late in the first, can make a case for himself as well. But when you redo drafts, it's rare that someone from the second round gets into the first round, let alone first overall. Even more rare where someone taken in the third round can make a legitimate case for the fact that he should have been first overall. But I think you make a legitimate one for Braden Point.
See, that's crazy. I'd have to go now. I'm going to have to go after this call up to go, and I'm going to have to go look at the draft. Because I'm kind of like that myself. In teams internally, you know, we always have if somebody doesn't pan out, and then you look and say, oh my God, we could have had this guy. Well, it's a farce to think like that, but you know, it just makes for good banter in the room. But, or you look at it the other way and say, holy cow, look at all the teams that passed on Point. We always, big one for us is Andre Platt, who went through two drafts and was taken like 208. And everybody says, oh, that was an unbelievable pick. And I'm like, yeah, or it was an unbelievable miss by everybody, including us, for a draft. But it's always fun. But you're right to have a guy in the third round that is doing what he's doing. And it's really impressive. And I'll tell you, one kid that's really going to benefit is Brett Howden, who was with us, and he went over to the Rangers in the McDonough deal. Yeah. Howden was kind of his little... He learned from Pointer, and his game improved, and he followed him in Moose Jaw. They played together there in development camps and stuff like that. And I'd be very surprised if down the road, you know, Brett Howden doesn't give Pointer some props for how he's developed, how well he's playing in the league so far.
Okay, I got one last one for you. It's the one that might get you in the most trouble. You ready? One of the best quotes I was ever given was when Steve Yzerman retired from the NHL. I asked Jason Williams in the Detroit dressing room, what's the biggest difference without Yzerman here? And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, it's a lot less sarcastic when I make a mistake. What's the biggest change from the Steve Yzerman Lightning to the Julian Brisebois Lightning?
I would say the biggest change would be Steve Yzerman's not here. And it's said from a point of, when you say the name Steve Yzerman, your Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion, captain, warrior, all that, and he carried an aura about himself that was, hey, this is Steve Yzerman. Isn't it weird too? Like all the great ones have. It's never like John Cooper. It's never like plain name, plain name. They've always got some sort of name that is absolutely unique that, you know, sets them apart from everybody. And it's like, that's the big thing. Like he brought a presence to us. I thought he brought a credibility to us when Jeff Vinnick took over and the organization was kind of in tough shape at the time. He brought instant credibility, and that's what he does. And the one thing about Julian is all those things. It's just his name is Julian Brisebois, not Steve Yzerman. And he brings the same amount of credibility, work ethic, all those things. But there's something to be said about a name. And until, you know, it's like until Julian, you know, works as a GM in a couple of years, and he's going to be phenomenal. I'm telling you, he is so bright. He's an unbelievable general manager. But he'll be the first to tell you he never played in the league, and so you just don't have that instant credibility. And that's the one thing Steve carries with him.
That's a great answer.
That is an excellent answer. I can't let you off the call here before I ask you about one of my favorite teams that I've ever seen play, maybe the greatest cult team of this generation, John, and that is Team North America from the World Cup. When you look back, or if you just think of Team North America, what comes to your mind right away? What sticks out about that squad?
Greatest team I'll have ever been behind the bench from now and moving forward. There'll be no better team. There'll be no better team, I don't think, ever constructed than that one right there. And I just feel blessed that I got to be a little bit of part of that. And it's that, you know what, actually, sorry, Jeff, but to go back to you talking about the draft.
Yeah.
Look at the team and say, if you were constructing Team North America now, with that same age group in mind back then, how many guys would have made it or not made it? You know what I mean? Like, if you take the players of today, because now you look back and say, well, Mitch Marner and Braden Point were eligible for that team and didn't make it.
You know what, John? If you played that tournament right now, they might be the favorite.
They would be. They would be the favorite.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I have a jersey hanging up in my office, and there's a picture. So the jersey's framed. There's two pictures. And one is of McKinnon and all the boys jumping up and down right when he scored the overtime goal.
Yeah.
So, like, that's just a feeling that if you watch that game, that's what you remember. And the second one is of me drawing up a 6-on-5 play or whatever I was doing, like on the bench. And to look at the guys surrounding me in that huddle is sick. Like, it's just, it's amazing. It's just Matthews and McDavid. And you just go to Shifley, McKinnon. You just go down the list and you're like, oh my gosh. So anyway, that was my thought, is that be the greatest team that I've ever been a part of.
Do you have a thought on this one as we conclude? Do you have I was wondering about this as well. If it would have come down to Team North America versus Team Canada, just considering how much Team North America galvanized opinion and curiosity, and people became emotionally engaged in that team, what would that rink have been like in Toronto?
Oh, it would have been bananas.
That would have. But I'm talking like the cheering split between cheering for Canada cheering for North America.
They would have cheered for North America.
Agree, John?
It would have been hard not to. What would they have done when Morgan Riley was going down the wing to take a slap shot?
Well,
Matthews.
Austin Matthews. Like, and I think they were such an unknown. They were so young. People blew through the Canadian-American thing. They were just like, they just fell in love with these kids that tried so hard, had so much talent and everything they had. And deep down, like, you know, being a Canadian, we all know how proud and how we just bleed the red and white, but that's the upcoming future. And I think there people were looking to see who could test Canada.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody, that's no slight on the Europe team that did an unreal job and gave Canada a big scare, but this would have been a legitimate, like, ooh, this isn't, who's going to win this? Like, I don't even know if there was odds in this, if Canada may have been the favorite.
It just would have been so bizarre to hear Canadian hockey fans cheering against Team Canada in Toronto.
You know what? I remember that.
Could have seen it, though.
When Russia was playing Finland that last game, I remember saying at the beginning of the broadcast that I know I'm not supposed to say this, but I want Finland to win this game because I want to see the North Americans play Canada. And the Canadian players ripped me at the next practice. They were like, you wanted us to lose to the North Americans. I said, no, I wanted to see you guys play them.
That's awesome.
Exactly. Like, it's amazing, too, because I understand the history. I understand the format and why it was the way it was. But, you know, certainly if you go back now and think, oh, man, maybe if two more teams would have got in, we took out the best two out of three and just had a one game and outer, that would have put us in. And then who knows what would have happened after that. But it sure would have been one hell of a fun ride.
It would have been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun catching up. John, best of luck the rest of the way. Your team is rolling. Keep it up. A lot of fun to watch. Continued success.
I appreciate you having me on, guys, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, John.
Yeah.
Looking to stream over 500 NHL games blackout-free? Sportsnet Now is the product for you. Available to anyone over the internet, Sportsnet Now gives you 24/7 access to Sportsnet's channels, including content not available on television. You can stream on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones and tablets, Apple TV, Xbox, PlayStation, and Chromecast. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. You can also stream NBA, Premier League, and all your favorite Sportsnet original programming and more. Visit snnow.ca for more details. We shall, Elliot Friedman, finish off this podcast as we normally do with some hashtag Ask31s from LJ Yannick. LJ Yannick. Let's go with that. What do the Penguins do? Currently not in a playoff spot, can't really be considered contenders with their goaltending, but still 3 to 4 years of prime Sid slash Gino. Do they sell more of the farm or try quick rebuild? Penguinos.
As long as Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are there in their primes, they are in it to win it. And I wouldn't give up on Matt Murray now that the Penguins believe there was something physically wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reason to sit there and say they're going to wait. Now that Murray's supposed to come back, they'll see where they are. But as long as Crosby and Malkin are in their primes, those guys are in it to win the Stanley Cup.
From John Uchats. Hope I have that one right.
Twitter should come with a pronunciation guide.
100%.
This is
to spell
people,
out
if you're going to tweet at us, send phonetic pronunciations of your names.
Or don't be offended if I just say John or LJ for the last
John Cockatosen.
John Fletch submits. In the event a team is charged a double minor, this is part of a thread here, but I've isolated one. In the event a team is charged with a double minor, I would like to see the defending coach able to choose a 4-minute 5-on-4 or a 2-minute 5-on-3. Which would you rather?
First of all, I love the creativity of the idea. I'd take the 2-minute 5-on-3.
So would I. Yeah. I don't know what the numbers say. My gut says just take the 5-on-3.
Yeah.
Danny Mac. Okay, nice and easy
name.
Is
this Dan McManus?
Always a chance, I suppose, sir. With Tortorella wearing a hoodie on the bench last week, even though it was because of an illness, he adds, could we see any other choose to ditch the suits?
I have to find out if there's a rule. See, the NBA had a rule. I didn't realize this. And I don't know if it's still there. Any of you follow basketball still or cover it still can tell me. But the college basketball, the coaches looked, by the end of games, their ties were 9 different directions. Their shirts were unbuttoned to the belly button.
Yeah.
They looked like they'd just been through a car wash.
They played, yeah.
But the NBA didn't allow that. You weren't allowed to take your jacket off in the NBA. I remember the way I found it out once was I was covering a game between the Raptors and the Knicks, and Jeff Van Gundy took off his jacket, and the referee went and told him, put it back on. Like, I never knew that was a rule. I got to find out if the NHL has anything like that, where you've got to do that. I would love to see more coaches and hoodies and things like that.
Get the old Robbie Fatorik look back. Maybe see some turtlenecks behind the bench.
A bolo
as well.
Tie.
Oh, that's going to be out west. Okay.
Peter should wear a bolo tie in Calgary.
Tyler McGillick. Any scoops on Rangers pending free agents? Hayes, Zuccarello, Hayes going to get paid.
Yes, I had one on my notes today. Colorado, I think, is in there on Hayes, too.
And where do you foresee the team either moving those players or deciding to re-sign them? Hayes, Zuccarello, Adam McQuaid.
Well, as I said earlier, I think the Rangers are all in on Panarin.
Yep.
So that's going to affect a lot of their decisions. The one thing with Hayes is, they really tried to sign him, and the two of them just didn't agree. Now, I don't have a problem with that. If you perceive your value one way and you disagree with the team, then there's nothing wrong with going to open market. But it says to me, if they couldn't do it last summer, why are they going to be able to do it now? It doesn't. So I think Boston will be on Hayes. I think Winnipeg will be on Hayes. I think Colorado will be on Hayes, and there's probably more. I mean, he's a center.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of people in on Hayes. You know, Zuccarello's an interesting one. I could see Nashville liking a guy like Zuccarello. He fits kind of with, you know, what I think they would do. But if you told me that Zuccarello signed an extension to stay, I wouldn't be surprised.
Nope, not at all. From FatDad69, our old pal, what has flooded your inbox more, Fortnite or Ference?
Ference. Jeff got the Fortnite ones.
I got
ones.
The Fortnite. You got
I
the
got
Ference.
The Ference.
You got the Ference ones.
But the answer is C, Nylander.
Well done. Darian Summers, here's an interesting one. The NFL recently did My Cause, My Cleats, where players got to customize their cleats with their favorite charity's logo / paint job.
Yes.
You think the NHL will ever do anything like this? You know, could you do that with like the skates or the tux or something?
You know what? I'm going to make a note of it right now, and I'm going to ask. Because I think it's a great idea. Baseball did that last year, too, with their own jerseys. You can put your own name on the jersey. I would love to see one weekend where you could do that in the NHL. I'd love to see it. Now, I think the only day where
on the skates, on the gloves.
As long as it's the same for everyone.
Helmet.
I'd love to see on the jersey. I'd love to see you pick your own name.
We're going to be a 32.
You know why I really love it? Because Burke and Doug would hate it.
Yeah, Stadler and Waldorf.
So that's why I would love it. I can already hear them whining about how bad it is. Oh, I want the league to do this.
Bring it up tonight then. Let's get our Wednesday going here. Stadler and Waldorf would absolutely hate it.
And every winter has to do the storm surge so that they would hate it even more.
Here's one from Pardon Clause.
Okay.
Has there ever been any meaningful discussion about changing the rule allowing teams to ice the puck on the penalty kill? I've never understood why committing a penalty should allow a team to violate another rule. At least make them gain their own blue line before dumping it. I've always wondered about that one, too. I've always assumed, Elliot, that it was a pushback from the players because the last thing you want, especially on a penalty kill, is significantly fatigued players because that fatigue leads to injuries.
I did ask Colin Campbell about that once several years ago, and he did tell me injuries was the big pushback on that.
Okay.
But I know it has been discussed. And this was probably about 3 or 4 years ago. He told me that injuries was the big reason. And the players do have to approve all rules changes.
Yes. Okay, there you go. We'll end the podcast on that one. Thanks so much for dropping by the pod. Hey, don't forget, Elliot mentioned it earlier on, we have a special edition once again, which as we keep doing them become less and less special, but we do appreciate you downloading and listening to them. Another podcast coming out Monday, our interview with LA Kings president Luc Robitaille. Just as a teaser, Elliot, what was the most interesting thing that you took away from the Robitaille interview?
Man, he had a lot of great stories.
Yes.
He had a lot of great stories. My favorite story was the draft day story, where he thought he was going one round earlier than he really did.
It's a beauty. Don't give out the punchline. We'll let Robitaille do that one on Monday when this podcast returns. I want to thank our guest, John Cooper, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. As always, I want to thank our producer, Emil Delich. And we take you out with the Kents. Is there anyone? Big thanks to Christina at Listen Harder and Warren and the boys. Thanks for listening to 31 Thoughts, the podcast. We're back on Monday.